Welcome to the Anita Chat Podcast. I'm your host and coach, Anita Rombo. This is the podcast for growth-oriented, high-vibe, and big-hearted people who are ready to show up and glow up to be the best versions of themselves. If you are ready to embrace your most authentic, aligned, and abundant life, one that feels great on the inside and out, then you, my friend, are in good company. Grab your favorite bevy, settle in. We've got lots to chat about.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Anita Chat. Friends, I'm so excited to be with you here today, and I'm also very excited to welcome a very special guest to the chat, Sarah Walton. Sarah is a business coach, and I don't think that that definition does her justice. So, Sarah, I'm definitely going to get you to introduce yourself, but I've been in Sarah's world for a little bit now, and we share a few mutual people in common. And the one thing that really spoke to me or resonated with me about Sarah is that we speak a lot of the same language. We have the same passions. I feel like she's my BFF from many moons ago, and I thought she's just perfect for this podcast. So needed to get you on. I'm so excited to have you here. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Ah, I'm so excited to be here, Anita. I wouldn't be anywhere else. I love it.
So maybe you could start by introducing yourself to my audience.
Well, sure. I mean, hi, everybody. It's so great to be here. I mean, and I think, gosh, how do I introduce myself? Yeah, I agree with you. It's like I'm a business coach. But what the heck does that mean anymore? And I feel like there's so many coaches out there. It's really important for us to talk about the different ways in which we support people, because a coach is, you know, we're just the guide along for the ride, right? We're there next to our people whom we love and adore. But really, my specialty, my secret sauce is our relationship to money. I love teaching people how to sell. I'm going to sell with integrity and empathy and compassion. And then I really love the world of abundance. And so those are sort of my, it's kind of like my trifecta, right? Sales, money, and abundance.
And that is why you're here, because this whole show is all about soulful success. And that's living a life that feels aligned, authentic, and abundant. I think we do a good job with talking about alignment and authenticity on the show. I think we could do a better job of talking about the financial abundance piece. We talked about abundance, but not the finance piece. And full disclosure, Sarah, I brought you here selfishly because I just wanted to talk to you as well, right? Like, this isn't just all only for the people that are on the other end listening to this, but I'm going to do something I think that puts me in a very vulnerable position, something that I've never done before and an older version might find a bit cringe, and that is declare, I love money. Uh-huh. I can say that I could never say that up until maybe about a year ago. There's been significant work that I've done throughout my life to overcome mindset blocks, and just like listening to you talk about financial, you know, abundance, and we're talking about the energetics of things in general. Like, I'm like, yeah, we need to dive into the energetics of money, the energetics of abundance. I want to do it. So There you have it. I did the cringeworthy thing and declared that I love money, but money loves me too. I also want to say I love money and money loves me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, is it all right if I share what I believe money actually is?
Yes.
Because it's different. And oh my gosh, Anita, I should tell you the truth. Like when this first happened, when I first sort of had this thought, which I don't even know if it was mine or not, you know what I mean? I was like, I think it came from somewhere else. But I was like, I'm never going to talk about this. No one's ever going to know that I had this thought. Like, oh my God, this is crazy. And it happened when I was actually kind of like rehearsing a keynote address I was supposed to be giving to a conference in the Poconos, right? And I was having so much fun. I'm getting all prepared and I've like got all my notes and everything's out around me. And I'm in this gorgeous cabin. I'm overlooking all these trees. And I'm like, this is amazing. And I start practicing my talk. And it's like, money is love. And I was like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. And I'm never telling anyone I just had that thought. Right. And then I keep practicing my talk and it keeps coming in. Money is love. And I'm like, what? And then I remembered earlier in my 20s, I had worked for a company called iAmplify, and it was right before Audible came onto the scene and podcasting was just coming out. And we were helping a bunch of thought leaders, though we didn't call people thought leaders yet back then, right? But these thought leaders sort of turned their work into a digital format. And one of those thought leaders was Marianne Williamson. And I don't know if you're familiar with her work or not, but she has this amazing book, Return to Love. And I've never studied A Course in Miracles, so I'm not even going to pretend to be an expert. But after hours and hours and hours in recording studios with her and spending time with her on her website and how does she want to present stuff, right? I really started to learn from her that there are two forces at work all the time. Love and fear. End of list. Right? That's it. And that love's job is to stoke fear so the fear gets pulled up to the forefront so we can see it, so we can heal it, and it can be transmuted back into love. And that's the job. And as this thought, money is love, kept going through my head, it was like, oh, money isn't love per se. It's not that it is love. It has that love-like energy, and it will stoke all of your fears. And so one of the reasons people freak out around money is to, in order to hold it, in order to be with it, you have to consistently heal what you fear.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I was like, I know, this is why I've been broke forever. Ow. Right. And all of a sudden, all the reason, like people who win the lottery and they lose it all, it's like, I don't want this energy around. It's showing me everything I'm afraid of. So they lose it. So they don't have to heal. And that definition of money really made me fall in love with it, because it will always show us where we can look next to grow. And if we look at it as this massive companion, that's going to be like, oh yeah, you're afraid that you're really not that good. I am. Yeah. Because you just thought that when you got paid, right? Yeah. How did you know that? Yeah. And then you start to be able to be open to what's in front of you, what's possible for you. And I think every time I've had one of those fears, like there's a big influx of money in the business, or even if someone passes away, there's an influx through an inheritance, or you get a surprise bonus, whatever it comes in, you'll have a thought pretty quickly about one, how quickly you can spend it, what you can go get now, run. Or you can look and go, whoa, what am I afraid of? Oh, I don't really belong. Really, where did you learn that? And then you can start to heal. And what's cool when you do that is the money stays there. It hangs out. And sometimes it grows. And then you can heal something else. And so if we can look at it that way, declaring I love money, I mean, you might as well say, I love personal development. You might as well say, I love spiritual development. I love growth. I love learning.
And I do. I love all of those things, right?
Yes.
That's where I totally dig what you're saying. Totally dig it. And I'm all about money's energy. And the thing that was really surprising for me is on this entrepreneurial journey, right? So I grew up, and this is another thing that really, I think, ties me and you together. I think we both came from really humble beginnings. You're very vocal about your experiences, and I'd love for you to share that later if you feel inclined. But coming from that type of a world where you didn't have very much, maybe there wasn't much in the way of people that you could look up to that had money, and maybe there was maybe some mindsets that you were exposed to that weren't really serving you in terms of your definition of money. I can speak for myself. I kind of had all of that. But to be able to work through them as you grow up, right? You know, so to put myself through 3 university degrees, to work in the corporate world, to do all that type of stuff, to be successful, quote unquote, on paper, like, you know, and have all the things, I really felt like I worked through a lot of those money blocks until, that is, I became an entrepreneur. And then I realized little inklings of it just kind of, and it looks a little bit different, feels a little bit different. And again, as a coach, you know, you want to get to the root cause of things. You want to explore things. You're always curious. You're like, I was like, why is this coming back now? I thought we were done with that. And it's just, that's why I said for the last year, like I really enjoyed going deep on that journey for myself. That personal growth and development journey is like, why is this coming back up? Like, I thought we were done with this. Where do I still need to heal my relationship with money? And you know, what do I do about this? Because it shows up in your business. And that then becomes your livelihood. That then becomes everything, right? It's all currency. It just doesn't stay, that energy doesn't stay in one aspect of your life. It kind of bleeds everywhere. So
always. Yeah. And I think entrepreneurship offers that in a different way, because it's one thing to deal with getting a raise inside of a corporation or working for someone else, which is still, it's got its own energy and all of us have an opportunity to heal there too. And then when you flip to entrepreneurship, there's no buffer.
It's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. When you're working in corporate, like someone else is in charge of sales, right? Or you're a part of a sales team or something like that. But someone else is responsible for deciding where that money goes once it hits the corporation. And you're just one of the places they decided it should go. However, when you're the person who is both generating the revenue and then deciding where it should go, there's a new level of relationship to the flow of money, and it will cause you to expand. You can't not, because you're taking on more roles than we do when we work inside of a corporation.
Yeah. So beautiful. Yeah. I'm so excited about this. So tell me then, what is the energetics of money? You said it's love, and I totally believe that. I totally believe in the opposite spectrums and the whole energy, emotion spectrum and all that type of stuff. So how do we tap into the energy of love and money, or the energy of money? I don't know. They do sound a little bit different, but they are the same thing, right? Like, yeah. I don't know. How do we do that?
Yeah, I know. Give me the ideas. Yeah, no. One of the things I love to say to people when they're feeling stuck in their business, or they're stuck around money, or like things have gone stagnant, or you have a month where it's just awful, which happens to everybody, right? Hi, let's just stop pretending that. Everybody has bad months. It happens. You're like, what? Do I suck now? Am I awful? Right, all these things that come up. There's something I love to tell people to do, and that is to go sit in a Starbucks. Just for 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes, you can pick a different coffee shop if you prefer. It doesn't matter. But to watch the amount of money flowing around the planet constantly. And for some reason, I feel Starbucks really can display that in a certain way. When there's usually a line, there's usually people in there working. There's people who go back and get more food or more coffee after they've already had some. There's this functioning happening there. And watching what's happening inside of a Starbucks and the constant flow of money. And we can even think, Anita, about the hundreds of thousands of dollars that have flown across the globe in the few minutes we've been talking. It's understanding that there's a constant flow we can jump into at any moment. And I think one of the other energies I love about Starbucks, which I happen to go to not very often, but I love when I go, like, you cannot tell me I can't go in there and spend $9 on coffee because I freaking love it, right? Like, I love the stupid green straw. I love the damn white cup. Like, I love the whole thing, the smell when you walk and how they make them all smell the same. I don't know. But like, the actual like cost of the coffee I buy is probably 67 cents, including the stupid sleeve that goes on the outside, right? But the value of the experience is $9.
Yep.
And that's where entrepreneurs get tripped up. They're like, yeah, but it only cost me 67 cents to make. It's like, yes, but it's not worth 67 cents to the person who's drinking it. And that takes a hot second to sort of kind of wrap your brain around, and then understanding what's happening in that flow and why I love to send people there just to watch. Just watch it happen. There's a value being provided. So the value is coming in the flow of money. Is that money will always go to where the perceived value is highest. And what we need to remember is that perceived value is in the eyes of the beholder, right? So for example, I have a t-shirt that belonged to my stepmother who passed away in 2018. You could not pay me $50,000 for that t-shirt. It's probably worth $2.50 value-wise, right? Like if you were to look at the dollar value-wise, but to me, it's worth everything. So you can't buy it from me, right? That is my perceived value of that t-shirt is so high that I wouldn't trade it. And what we need to understand is it's our job to both convey that value or to display that value or have someone experience that value. And in order to offer that to the world in such a way that the money follows, we have to trust ourselves. And that seems to be the biggest block for most people is they're like, oh, but if I charge more, I'm a jack wagon. It's like, where did you learn that? Who taught you that? Right? We don't get mad at heart surgeons that it's $45,000 for a 2-hour surgery. Nobody gets mad about that. Why? Because we can see the value, right? It's like you've got to understand what you're offering has its own value in its own way, whether it's a $9 cup of coffee, a 45-minute, coaching call, or something else you want to offer that stays with people even longer. If you are not completely trusting yourself to provide that value, you're going to get blocked when you go to charge for it. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, and I'm loving this tie-in between self-trust and kind of being an energetic match with your value. And when you are emanating at a vibration, then you're going to be attracting that same vibration back to you, right? So if you don't think that you're worth it, then you're probably going to attract the kind of caliber of clients that aren't able to, that wouldn't be your dream clients because they are looking for a deal, quote unquote, versus the transformative experience that you can offer, right? So it's all about the self-trust, like how much do you actually think you're worth, right? And how much do you believe in that? Do you believe in your ability to attract that? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is that what you were trying to say?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're pointing to something that's really important that sometimes can trip people up, I think. And that is that your value as a human, right? We can't calculate that. Like, you're invaluable.
We're priceless.
We can't put a price on that, right? It's like, and I think that trips people up sometimes. Like, what are you worth? Like, we can't put a price on that. You're invaluable, right? But I think the self-trust kind of comes in even more when it's like, do I trust myself to provide the value I just promised? That to me, like that separation of the human from the offering is really critical in understanding how to price things, because you can really start to lean on yourself and trust yourself that you will fulfill on that value separate from you, right? We can't put a price on you, but we can put a price on the value of your work to somebody else. And that is the important piece. As I say to my clients all the time, you are not your business. And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I know it's hard because we created it. We gave birth to it. We do all the things. Like if you're like me, I market, I sell, I work, I do, I have a team, sure. But then I fulfill on everything we sell, right? Like I'm like, oh, I'm the business. Yeah, I'm not the business.
Especially too, if your brand is your name, right?
Yeah.
It's different too. I just published a book in the fall. It was really easy for me to tell everyone about my book, The Lighthouse Project, right? It's a co-authored book, so proud of it. But it was a thing that was very distinct for me. And other people had a hand in creating it too, right? That whole like team mentality, right? Yes. But my coaching program, you know, my website, like that's Anita Rombo. Boom. Like that's me, right? And that I do feel like I am the business, but I'm not. I am separate. I am my own self. I'm sovereign to myself. And then this is just an extension or a part of me that I'm putting up for offer to support. That's right,
to add value. Yeah. And I think, you know, when we can get that we're separate from the business, it really opens up to one of my favorite questions, which is, what does the business need me to do next? Now it's not so personal. Now it's as we treat it as its own entity. Like I teach people this a lot because I've never had a client where their primary relationship doesn't come into play. I find that fascinating, but it just is a thing, right? So it's like, I always say to people, there's you, there's your life partner, and then there's the relationship. What does the relationship need you to do? And it's like, oh, all of a sudden it's very simple and it's very easy and it's not so personal. You don't feel personally attacked. You don't feel like you have to do it. And I sort of start with that because we've all had a primary relationship where we feel like we are the relationship. No, the relationship is its own entity and we can watch it die. Right? Or we can ask what it needs and start to work on that. What does it need? And then it's not so, you didn't pick up your socks. It's like, oh, the relationship needs me to figure out how to cause this to work. And it takes the personal sting out of it. The same thing can happen in business. It's like, I don't want to go live. I can't send that email. I don't want to write the sales page. I don't want to get on the sales call. All of a sudden, all that goes away. When it's like, oh, but the business needs revenue so it can stay alive. Oh, well, I can do that. And it puts us almost kind of back into that corporate position we were talking about earlier, where it's not so personal. If the head of IBM were to come in and be like, listen, our last email campaign didn't work the way we wanted it. Who's got the analysis on that? Oh, well, look, this specific subject line didn't work as well as we thought. Oh, okay, got it. How many links did they click on that one? Oh, not so many. Oh, but when we called it this, it worked. People like that better. Oh, okay. Now it's not personal, but what you're doing is being responsible for communicating value, right? We're not learning how to do subject lines or how to write the email a certain way so we trick people. And I think somewhere along the line that got collapsed in there. And that's not the case at all. It's our job as the stewards of the work to make sure that its value is being properly communicated. And all of a sudden, that's not personal. That's to honor the work.
So beautiful. Now, can we talk a little bit about men versus women and their relationship to money, accepting wealth? Because I know, again, I felt really cringy in a way saying, how do you have money? It loves me, because I've never done that before. But that just sounds, I don't know, it's very in your face, you know, it's a very big declaration. And I think men don't have as hard a time saying that they love money or going after money. And, you know, meanwhile, what do you think that is? And
oh, it's designed that way for sure. I mean, I don't mean to say it like, well, here we go. I don't mean it like that at all. But we're living in a patriarchal society. We still are. That's very, very clear to all of us. Women were not supposed to handle money ever, right? We were traded, basically. We were passed from fathers to husbands, never to see money. Sometimes they had to pay people to take us, right? Yeah. And we never handled it. We never touched it. This is centuries and centuries and centuries and centuries and centuries. And we know now that belief systems, experiences are passed on through genes. Yeah, we just know this. And it was not until 1976 that a woman could have a mortgage without a man's signature. It was not until 1976 that a woman could get a credit card without a man's signature. And so there's always this idea that women just don't get it. You just can't really handle money the right way. We need a man to tell you how to do that. And even though that is starting to shift, thank God, right? It's still there and we feel it all the time. It's a constant structure we're going to bump up against. It's so important that we talk about it because it literally is the air we breathe until we go, oh, wait, air is separate from me, right? Until then, it just is. It just is the way it is, the way it is. And it's our job to sort of go, that's the way it was. That isn't real. And you're going to bump into it again. Because it's literally in our DNA. It happened for so long that it's going to take us a while to catch up, to have our psyches catch up to the truth of the situation, which is women are much better at handling money than men. And that's like researched scientific fact. That's not like Sarah Walton being like, power to the woman. It's like it's documented over and over and over that wonderful things happen when women have money. And that has been proven over and over and over is that when women get more money, great things start to happen. And we know from the state of the world now, when men have the money, not always so great, right? And of course, there are men who handle money beautifully. Of course, we know that. There's evidence of that as well. But on the whole, we can look at the state of the world and see when men is disproportionately in the hands of men, we have problems, right? And at the time of this recording, there are a lot of children being slaughtered at the hands of billions of dollars, right? And one of the things I love to help women sort of stop and think about this is that if that money was in the hands of women instead, I truly believe with all of my heart, and I will say this a little bit forcefully, and I will stand by it, is that we would not be dropping bombs on each other's children. We would be dropping food, water, and medicine. And I really believe that. And I think it's time for us to help each other shed this idea that we shouldn't be charging more or we shouldn't be extremely wealthy. I think we really should because it has been proven we are fantastic at making sure it gets to the people who need it the most or gets to people at all. And one of the more basic studies that's been done on this, and forgive me, I cannot find it. I read it once, so I always have to be very careful because I don't want to be like, you know, the truth is, I'm pretty sure it was Harvard, but I can't find it again. So I always put that caveat in there. And that was over 15 years. They looked at, you know, on average, what happens to money in the women's in the hands of women versus the hands of men. And it was for every $10 that was in a woman's hand that she had complete control over, $8 went back into the community. Every $10 a man had, $2 went back into the community. So it's just this thing that we do, right? And my current favorite example of that, like her or love her, like her or love her, that's pretty much the only option I'll give you. Like her or hate her.
Are we talking about Taylor?
It's about Taylor Swift has done. Like we look at what she's done and it's like, how do you even get mad? Every single place she went, every food bank got hundreds of millions of dollars over here, right? Her staff and her team. And to say, it makes me cry, but like the truck drivers who received what they called from their own mouths life-changing money. That's what we do with it. And it makes me cry because it's like, could you imagine that? If it was 100-fold, 1,000-fold, could you imagine what would start to happen to the face of the planet? If we started to believe that that's the way things could be, because even watching it, right? It's like, is that really, right? We still could, is that, did she do that by herself with music that she wrote all by herself in a room alone? Wait, really? Right. And we still have that energy around it as opposed to like, of course you add value to people's lives. You make them sing and dance to the point that they think there's an earthquake. Like the earth was like, oh, so many people are dancing with joy. There's an earthquake in San Francisco. No, people are just shaking it off and having a blast. That level of value and joy it comes back. And for us to live in a world where that's what we're doing and that's what we're creating and we trust ourselves to fulfill on it and to show up on what we promised, oh my God, would the world start to change. So I know that sounds like a big, huge vision I have, but it really does start with all of us with our $10 and $8 going back into the community. That's on us. So it's breaking through this patriarchal BS that we don't know how to handle it. Evidence proves otherwise. And it's time for us to step into the truth of that and get the spiritual energy that comes with us and that it allows us to fulfill what we're here to actually do.
Your words really resonate with me. It's interesting because I'm in the midst of preparing for a keynote speech for International Women's Day. And the title of my talk is The Power of Women, Building a Better World for All. And so I'm actually doing a time capsule. So I'm going back 100 years and just looking at how we've grown and evolved and all the things that we've done and continue to do every single day. We show up and we think about how do we serve our community? How do we serve our families? How do we show up in the highest and best possible way? That's just the crux of what we do and what our essence is. And so I totally agree with you and see value. Like I see what you're saying and I agree with you wholeheartedly. My question to you, I guess, is if you had a hard time imagining because of the way that we've been indoctrined or, you know, our genes or whatever, you know, just the thought process that we aren't capable of holding that success or holding that money, how can one start to unravel that or work with that a little bit? How can you make yourself able to hold it a bit more?
Yeah, I think take the money that you have right now, really, and look at it and ask yourself how you could be the best steward possible of it. And one of the fun games I have people play, because one of the things that happens with money is we sort of spend it without noticing, right? You're like, oh, where'd it go? Like it can kind of be that experience and that can sort of reinforce this idea you're not quote unquote good at it. So one of the fun games I play with people, so if someone's in debt, let's say, come to me and they're like, oh my God, I'm in debt. I don't know what to do. It's like, okay, great. You know, it happens slowly. We're going to get out of it slowly, but here's what we're going to do. We're going to play a game. So we have a set it and forget it, whatever that is. I don't care if it's $10 a month or $1,000 a month. It doesn't matter. We do one set it and forget it, which is so great about our systems now. We can set that up. And then we watch the behavior. So let's say this person like normally gets sushi every Friday and it's $52 to go get this amazing sushi lunch they love. And all of a sudden they're like, you know what? I'm going to bring my lunch on Fridays. Every Friday, they take the $52 they would have spent on lunch and throw it on the card. Right. And the debt starts to come off really freaking fast. And I'm like, what did you do? Well, I paid attention. That's it. And look at what you're doing. And they're like, oh my God, it's going down so fast. I'm like, yeah, that's how it got on there. Right. Is you were taught that it was too painful to deal with. So you just put it on as opposed to what do I want to do with this the most? Do I want that fun sushi Friday dinner and lunch? And sometimes you do go get it. Oh my God, you deserve it. The hands that prepared it deserve that. The people who dealt with the fishing industry and the race and all the like. Oh my God, all of that goes into wonderful, wonderful places and there's nothing wrong with spending it there. That's a wonderful thing to do, especially if it brings you joy. And then on the days when you're like, you know what? I'm good without it. Good. Take that money, be a good steward of it and let's start paying down that debt so you get to keep more. And then once they're out of debt, we do the same thing with savings. So if it's like that $52 now goes into savings because you were going to spend it anyway, but let's start deciding where it's going to go instead of flippantly passing it along. Right. And that kind of comes from a Buddhist practice that I love, which is the chain of gratitude. Right. So if you sit down to a meal, I don't eat meat, but let's say you do. You sit down to a burger or whatever and you look at it and you take about 45 seconds to actually think about. Makes me cry. Sorry, I'm very emotional today. But I'm very like tuned in humanity today. But
you just sit down.
I know. Right. We cry all the time. So think about, you know, the farmer that raised the cow, the grass that had to be grown, the people who dealt with the water that had to grow the grass. Like you go back that far to the raising of that cow, to the person who slaughtered it, which is a very challenging job, right? To the person who then drove the truck, then the person who made sure it stayed safe for you, then the hand that prepared it today, the hand that brought it to your plate, right? And you go through all the things. You do that with your money. You do that with the things that you consume. And suddenly there's a depth of awareness about how you're participating in that same flow we talked about in Starbucks, but that you are deciding and part of a massive flow of where money is choosing to go next. And that you get to decide that. And once you kind of jump into that, you're like, I'm really freaking powerful. I'm really good at this, right? And it's like, oh my God, these guys treat their staff horribly, so I'm not going to put it here again. I'm going to go find somewhere else, right? And we get to kind of choose that. And I think if you can pull your awareness into how you're using your money and how you're sharing it with the rest of the planet and the other humans who get to touch it, all of a sudden, the infinite nature of money starts to become present for you. And what I mean by that, it's one of my favorite things to do in conferences. I'm going to start holding them again. I'm so excited now that it's not, we're past the pandemic, right? But anyway, so what I do is in the front row of my conferences is I get a $100 bill and I give it to the first person and they pass it to the next, they pass it to the next, they pass it to the next, right? And then I go pick it up at the very end. And I said, did this lose any value at all? No. Did it add value to every single person it touched? And they were like, yes, I felt it was so awesome. I just got to touch it. I felt better. I felt amazing. And then you pass it on to the next person and they had the same experience. And it never lost its value. It was always there. It was always constant. And we're just deciding how to share it with each other. And all of a sudden, it's not my money and your money. It's the flow of money. And that we get to choose how we want to participate and how we want to direct and move it through the planet next. And that's one of the best ways that you can start to see you're a fantastic steward of money. You just might not have been paying attention because you were taught it was bad, or you haven't healed something that would allow more of it into your life. But that sort of frees it up because, again, mm-hmm. it takes the personal judgment out of it. And you see instead the addition of value that it is to other people's lives. So it's a joy to participate in deciding where it goes next.
You just reminded me of two things. So one, last night I was coaching one of my favorite clients. I know you're not allowed to have favorites, but we've been working together for a really long time. One of her goals was a financial goal, and she wanted to save a certain amount. She was also just wanted to feel more financially secure and stable. That was really important to her. And we had surpassed it by leaps and bounds. And now she's actually changing where she's living. So she's going to be moving. And so that's going to have an impact on her finances. So that's our next evolution of goals and working towards things is what's our new strategy going to be to, you know, achieve the goals that she has. And I made a suggestion and it involved spending some money. And she was really quick to say, nope, not doing that. And it was such a change from how we started. And she was just like, no, I just really want to save money. Like it was almost like we went from one extreme to the other. But it's really does prove that, you know, it's such an empowering thing. And it is, everyone is able to start and make improvements at any point in time. But also energy flows where attention goes. And so if we focus on energy, money is energy, then it's also going to grow if that's the goal that you have. If you have a different focus, you can easily spend it, you know, just in as much time. But it is energy. And then you also kind of brought me to think about, we're talking about energy and it's all around us. And when you become really more mindful of all the different people and aspects of that money, thought of like money as air. It exists. And you become aware of it when you are pinched, when you feel you don't have an air supply, you're aware that you can't breathe, right? Yes. When you have no money, you're painfully aware of the fight or flight. This urgency comes out. But also if you have ample amount of air to breathe, you may not be as aware of it. It's just around. The energy of abundance is just around. You notice it when you're deprived of it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's absolutely right.
So, oh my God, I'm just so excited. So do you have any, aside from going to Starbucks, which I think I'm going to be treating myself to a nice little latte on the weekend.
Do it. Do it.
Do you have any other advice that you want to share in terms of how to cultivate more of an abundance mindset into our life? And it doesn't necessarily have to do with money or specific entrepreneurship, but any tips?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the best things we can do when you get scared, because it happens to all of us, right? Like I said, everybody can have a bad month. It's like, oh my God, I'm never going to work again, right? Like we all have those thoughts, like welcome to humanity. We live in a world where scarcity is what we breathe in all day, every day, right? So those moments are going to happen. And I think one of the best things we can do, whether it's, you know, I don't know where my next client's coming from, or I feel like I'm out of ideas. You know, that happens a lot with our constant demand for creating social media content or email content, you know, that sort of feeling of like, I'm tapped out, I'm exhausted, burnout, these sort of like end of the road sort of feelings, right? Like, that's it, I'm done, it's over. That to me is scarcity. And so one of my favorite tips to give people in those moments, regardless of why it was instigated in your brain at the time, is to put your feet flat on the floor and wiggle your toes, which sounds funny, but it'll pull you out of your patriarchal head. right? Which is where we've been taught money and content and ideas are. It's not in your head. It's actually really in your body and in your mind and your heart. So wiggling your toes. And by the way, this is a great thing you can do at any time.
I'm doing it right now.
It's still here, right? I love giving this. When people are like, oh my God, I was in a meeting and I was pitching and I started wiggling my toes. And I was like, you nailed it, right? Oh my God, it was the best one ever. So it's like, we can pull ourselves back into our body, and wiggling your toes is just like one of the best tricks I can give anybody anytime to pull yourself out of that, you know, mind spiral that we can find ourselves in. It's like, oh, wait, no, I'm safe. And that's the key to abundance is, oh, I'm here. You wiggle your toes. Okay, I'm safe. I'm safe. And one of the examples I like to give is, let's say you get a surprise bill, a ticket, your energy bill was more than you thought it was, whatever. Pick a thing and you're like, oh my God, this bill, I don't have the money for this bill. Oh my God, right? And you're focused on that. Wiggle your toes, look up, and start to notice the space around things, right? So if you're watching us on video right now, right? Like, there would be my head. Don't look at my head. Look at the space around my head, right? Same with Anita. Look at the space around Anita's head. What's around you? So like right now, I can see my camera. I can see some lights. Like, but what's the space around those? And you start to look at the space. And the reason we do that is it's starting to open your mind up to all of the possibility as opposed to where the scarcity lives in that bill. So you're looking up, you look at space, you look for space. And this is actually scientifically proven, and I'll give everyone an example. So it's that idea that, you know, let's say you're decided to buy a new car and you're researching new cars and you decide to get a black Toyota. Right? You're like, that's what I'm getting. I love it. Oh my God. And then you're out just doing your life. And what do you see everywhere? Black Toyotas. Like, you could look at it. You're like, oh my God, there's another one. And it's not like the dealership was like, hey, send out a whole bunch of black Toyotas. She wants it. That's not what happened. Your focus shifted. And all of a sudden, you're aware of what was already there that you didn't see. And that's what that space exercise does, is it opens your brain up to look for things that were already there, but you weren't seeing. And when we do that and you're in that space, my next step for you would be, who needs me? And you think of the first three people that come into your mind, you call them, you email them, you text them right then. And it could be Bob from accounting from your job 18 years ago, or it could be Susie you ran into the supermarket yesterday. It doesn't matter. You reach out to those three people. And it's astounding what happens when we do that, because you're in the space of looking for opportunity. And what I want all of us to remember is both opportunity and money will only ever come to us through other people. It never comes out of nothing. It comes from other humans. So when we're looking for opportunity and we're like, I'm not tapped out, I'm done. And you look in the space and you think of those three people and you reach out right then, I guarantee, I don't think this has ever not worked for anyone, something will pop. Someone will be like, oh my gosh, I was just looking for someone who could come and speak. What's your speaker's fee? I was just looking, oh my God, I was just talking to somebody else. They needed a coach. I couldn't find your number. I'm so glad you reached out. Like, all of these different things can start to come in because you were open to the black Toyotas. You looked for opportunity instead of looking at scarcity. And every time that you do that, you are training your brain that there's always a next, which we coaches love to tell you. There's always a next. And you've got to train your mind to actually look for it, just like you train yourself to look for the black Toyotas without even meaning to. So it's this idea that this is possible. This is about training your brain to look for the opportunities that are already there that you might be missing right now. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. And I think it also goes back to the whole self-trust and trust bit. If you trust in a force that's bigger than you, whatever you decide to label it as, energy, God, whatever, but it exists, right? Like, you have been taking care of your whole entire life and you've got a lot of living to do and you're going to be just fine. And if you just take a pause and you are in this moment and you just take a look at this moment and the whole gratitude, the chain of, like, incorporate the gratitude feeling, you know, you can't help but see potentially other opportunities that exist, those possibilities just show themselves to you. And I think that they come if you're open to looking for them. But if you're looking at not the space around, right, if you're looking at the bill, or if you're looking, then you miss out on those things because you're just very fixated and rigid in terms of what the solution needs to look like, right?
Yeah, and that's the only truth you can, that's the only quote-unquote truth you can see, because it's what you're looking at, right? And it's the only thing that seems real.
I so love this talk. Thank you so much. So Sarah, before we wrap up, is there a place where you'd like to direct people to if they want to stay in touch with you, if they want to be a part of your world, just like I am?
Sure. I mean, I love my YouTube channel. And come on over there. People are like, what does she look like? What is she really like? I'm like, I turn on the camera and start talking. So good luck. No, but I love my YouTube channel. So much fun. I also have a podcast. It's called the Game On Girlfriend podcast. And I hang out on Instagram quite a bit. But I do have something I'd love to offer, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. Please.
Yeah. So I know a lot of business owners, right? They're just like, I want more money. I want more money. And it's like, okay, I got it. But you actually need to have a number in mind. And so I created a tool called the Freedom Calculator, where you actually plug in your exact expenses and your goals in your business, and it will give you an exact number to aim for. I love it so much. And what makes it so powerful is we all know the subconscious brain, once you give it something to do, it will. And so let's say you decide after, you know, you go through the Freedom Calculator and you get a number of $20,000 a month, totally making that up, but whatever, let's say it's $20,000 a month. Now your brain has something to work on. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay. So how many units do I need to sell? Or how many people do I need to talk to this month? Or how many new people need to decide to work with me? And let's say it's 10 people. Now you're like, oh, well, I can do that in a month. And all of a sudden, you have a pathway to actually hitting your freedom number. Plus, I also packed it with about 5 pages of marketing ideas and marketing experiences you can create for people so that the right people can find you. And that's just on my website. It's sarahwalton.com/freedom. And you can
awesome. Go grab that. I'll be sure to link that in the episode description. Yeah. That's amazing. I actually know my number, but I'm sure I could benefit from some of the marketing stuff. So that will be a lot of fun.
I love it.
I'm married to an accountant, so.
Lucky you. You got that number left, right, and center, sister.
Yeah, for sure. But thank you so much, Sarah. I really, really enjoyed this. And I'm looking forward to having you back. I think, again, we could talk about so many things. Like, I have not even scratched the surface of the question bank that I have ready for Sarah Walton. So thank you again. And I'm so, so honored to have you here. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute joy. I really appreciate your time, too.
And I'll see you guys next week. Bye for now.